Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world, on the internet, by webcast and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Second show of 2014. Thank you very much for your great feedback and your emails. Thank you very much if you have made a donation in the last couple of weeks. Gratefully received. We need your donations to keep this work going. If you want to send me feedback about the show or make a donation, go now to the website, www.theunexplained.tv, www.theunexplained.tv, and the website designed and created by Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool. Thanks to Adam for his really hard and continuing work. We've had a couple of issues with iTunes recently, shows occasionally taking longer than they might to actually get onto iTunes, but just know that if ever you're in a situation where you think, I wonder if Howard's done a new show, and you don't find one on iTunes, try my website and you might well find it there. That's just a situation I think that is current at the moment, and hopefully it will clear very, very soon. This time round, we have a return visit, and I'm very excited about this, from the very first guest on the very first edition of The Unexplained almost 10 years ago. Back in 2004, Dr. Bruce Goldberg was my first guest. I'll tell you more about him very, very soon. He's coming on from Los Angeles by the miracle of digital technology. Did I ever tell you about how we used to do the show in those days? The show was on radio at the very beginning, and I was given the chance to do it by a man called Kelvin McKenzie, who is very well known in the media in the UK, a great newspaper man and media man generally. And he allowed me to do The Unexplained on a Saturday night on a national radio station that was heard on AM all over Europe. It was a great privilege to be able to do this, and I made the show happen all by myself. Monday to Friday, I worked by getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, morning drive news on a music station in London. So I had this dual life of doing news on a music station Monday to Friday, and then a late night talk show late on Saturday night. Absolutely loved it. And of course, subsequently, we've developed this show online. It has continued, and it's grown around the world, but that is where we were 10 years ago. So Dr. Bruce Goldberg was the first guest on the first show. And Dr. Bruce Goldberg is a man who did a thing called hypnotherapy progression. Now, you've heard about regression. He does that too. But he still does this, hypnotizes people, and then takes them forward in time. And on the show, he progressed his wife. I think it was it 300 years? It may have been even further. And it was the most amazing thing. She was in a studio, and so was he, at KABC Los Angeles, linked to my studio in London. And she was saying, I'm looking now, I can see a flying car. And I remember during that first show thinking, I wonder if the British audience is ready for this. Thankfully, they were. But I worried for a while. Bruce Goldberg was a great guest. He's coming back to talk about progression, regression, time travel, teleportation, and all that kind of stuff very, very soon here at The Unexplained. Thank you for your emails. Great suggestions. Please keep your emails coming. I see them all, and I'm going to do some shout-outs right now for some of you. I can't, unfortunately, mention everybody who's emailed, but I want to get in as many as I can right now. So let's say hi and thank you to Matt in Penzance. I hope it's dry for you there, Matt, because I know you've had flooding in that area. We've certainly had flooding in the southeast of England. Boy, have we. Anna Maria in America, thank you for your great email. George in Norfolk, UK, who's 16 years of age and a new convert to The Unexplained. George, glad you found the show, and 16 years of age is roughly when I started to question the way things work in the world, so it's nice to have you there and doing that. Dean Diefendorf in Brooklyn, New York, thank you for your email. Darren, thank you for your kind thoughts. Duncan McFedrin in Canada, thank you for your email. Vic in Sydney, Australia, suggesting Dr. Stephen Greer. Oh boy, Vic, we've tried many times, but I'm not sure whether he does podcasts. We need to put some pressure on him. So if you want to email him and suggest he comes on here, I'd love that. Alan Foxall near Gloucester, UK, has a story to tell. Tell me more about it, Alan, if you can. Terry emailed about the Liverpool Care Pathway, which I've talked about a lot on this show. It was a procedure that was used with elderly people at the end of their lives that some claimed hastened the end of their lives. And you will know if you've listened regularly to this show that my father was put on that. And I will have more to say about that one of these days. I just think that it was not right in many, many circumstances. But let's leave it at that for right now. Kimberly in the US, thank you so much for your thoughts and your suggestions. Shannon Lush in Newfoundland, I haven't forgotten Shannon. Richard W. Clatt in the US, thank you for your superb email. Daniel, who started listening to this show around the time that Art Bell quit. Well, we all hope, don't we, Daniel, that Art Bell, the greatest in this field, will be back very soon for the world. Scott Bishop in Wichita, thank you very much for your email. And Harley in Melbourne tells me a story. And if I'm quick, before we get to Dr. Bruce Goldberg in the US, I will tell you the story, okay? Harley says, the first time I encountered something that I thought was a spirit was when I was about 11. I woke up in the middle of the night with the feeling of something poking my leg. I went to look at what was there, and in the middle of the doorway saw a young girl, probably only 2 years younger than me, in a dress. She stood there for about 5 minutes, and it wasn't until after a while that I became very scared, and then she started to fade away. I can still remember that very clearly. I think, Harley, and thank you for that email from Melbourne, Australia, I think an awful lot of people have had experiences like that. I can remember being 17 years of age and seeing, and I know this sounds a bit crazy maybe, but it's the truth, remember seeing something that looked like a little stick alien figure standing in the doorway of my bedroom. And that's absolutely true. And when I got scared, it disappeared. And I'm not crazy. That happened. Go figure. All right, let's get to California now. By the miracle that is modern digital technology and 10 years on, let's reconnect with Dr. Bruce Goldberg. Bruce, thank you very much for coming back.
Well, it's my pleasure to reincarnate on your fine show.
Well, it is a kind of reincarnation.
Yes, you told me. I was your initial guest on your internet or mentality here.
Well, listen, my phrase for life, my guiding phrase for life has always been, if you're going to have one, have a big one. So I thought we're going to get a really good guest, somebody a long way from London, and we're going to see if we can get him into a radio studio in Los Angeles and do something big for the first show. And we certainly did that with you.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, back last June, I was actually in Londinium for a vacation, and I very much enjoyed it. To me, it's the best city other than outside of America that I've ever been to. International and fun. The people are great. I just want you to know, I love London. And I've been, you know, I have a lot of British patients who come here, and I do Skype sessions or who come to my office in Los Angeles, but it's a great city.
It is a great city, and let me tell you, isn't it funny how there's that old Petula Clark song that the other man's grass is always greener? I love Los Angeles, where you are.
Also, she's also saying downtown, so, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure whether I like downtown Los Angeles too much, but I love Los Angeles, and I love California.
Well, I'm in the valley, so I get away from over the hill. I'm in Woodland Hills, which is the San Fernando Valley, so we get away from the usual nuts and berries, as they say, from Los Angeles here.
I was going to say, you're in the millionaire strip, aren't you?
Well, I'm in a very affluent neighborhood, and I like the valley because I'm about 20 minutes away from going to where the crazies are, or when I do television interviews or the various producers I meet with. But at the same time, when I have my local bailiwicks here, I don't have to deal with people, you know, with tattoos wall to wall and all the other stuff, you know.
You have a local bailiwicks, do you?
Yes, well, we actually, you know, it's very interesting. Not far from where I live, there are pubs.
Okay, British-style drinking establishments.
Yes, and they're actually, we even have an Arthur Treacher's fish and chips place.
That sounds fab. And you do the whole cosmetic thing. I suppose you have to, living in Los Angeles, if you've got celebrity clients. You know, you've got to look like they do.
Well, you know, I have patients from all over the world. I actually have different, you know, my practice is not your typical therapy practice. I deal with both celebrities, of course, not just in Los Angeles, but I also deal with politicians, CEO types, you know, so I have a very wide, and professional athletes too. So I have a wide range of people, as well as the average person. I mean, the average person is really my main patient MO, so to speak. But I do have what I call the more exotic ones, which is fun because I don't like to get bored. And, you know, Los Angeles people are kind of like, they're a little strange and not exactly the most stable or highly integrity people in the world. So I like to have
I'm glad you said that.
Well, I mean, I'm being honest. I mean, you know, it's anybody who lives here has any business. You know, not everybody's like that, but you know, you got a lot of flakes here. This is a very weird city, and it's a city where you can hide because it's a geographically it never ends. It's the largest county in the country, and it's like you know, like 60 or 70 or 80 miles long. I mean, so you can run away here. But at the same time, there are good people here too. But I like the idea of the variety of people from New York, Chicago, you know, London, Paris, Barcelona. You know, all these places. That's fun. I love that concept. So
the entire world goes to Los Angeles, I think, and many of them find something, and some of them don't. And they come home, but it's a great melting pot, and that's why I love it. Listen, what I want to do first off, if I may, is just flash back very quickly to a tiny little soundbite, a little snippet of what we did on radio 10 years ago. So I'm just going to spin that in now. It's just a few seconds, and then we'll come right back up to date. It's almost like a little bit of, it's a little bit of regression, isn't it? Really. Let's do it right now.
Obviously, if you want to document a future life progression, you've got to be really patient because we're talking about hundreds of years, in certain cases, even thousands of years.
The one thing that worries me, and, you know, obviously as a journalist, and I think any, as we say here in Britain, the punter will ask this question, by doing what you do and by putting people under the hypnotic influence, and we've all seen performers in this country and in your country do that, and, you know, there is a lot of documented evidence that this can be achieved. Are you not afraid that you are messing with people's minds and actually planting seeds or doing damage there that could give them problems down the track?
Well, I've done actually over now 14,000 patients and done 35,000 procedures on these people over the last 30 years. And if this was a problem, I would be Charlie Manson's roommate by now.
And that was a clip from the first edition of this show a long, long time ago. And I think we were both remarkably chipper, you know, for the first show. I was a little bit on edge, but didn't sound it. And it all went remarkably well. But I remember thinking back then, Bruce, is the British public ready for this? Because at the time, we were talking about you using your hypnosis technique to do progression. And I think it was your wife you had on, and you shot her hundreds of years forward into the future. It was a quite remarkable thing, but I do remember sitting there thinking, I wonder if the Brits are really going to get this.
Well, let me tell you something. If that's what you're worried about, let me clear that real fast. I mean, Great Britain is a leader in, number one, you had more cases of teleportation in your country than any other country in the world, if you go back to the literature. Secondly, United States, we steal your shows. I mean, the BBC America comes in here. You guys do more metaphysical stuff. I wouldn't worry about that as a problem at all.
I relaxed about it very quickly. You helped me to feel much more comfortable about it. But no, I mean, I soon realized that there was an appetite for all of this, whether you're in Los Angeles, whether you're in Liverpool, whether you're in Lisbon.
Well, the British audience, by the way, is extremely simpatico. Do you know there are more psychics per capita by the what we call the little old lady kind of psychics in Great Britain than any other country in the world? So it's the common – British people – I'll tell you what I love about British people. I've been working with them for decades, is that, number one, they're classy, they're well-read, they're smart, they're very diligent, they're very conscientious, and very open-minded. So as far as metaphysics is concerned, you know, there are certain countries in the world that are very open to metaphysics. Great Britain is one of them, Germany is another, Russia is another one, very big on it. So you have nothing, that's the last of your worries.
All right, I want to talk with you about the teleportation, because that's fascinating, and that's something new for me on this show. We haven't really talked very much about that, and time travel too. But I want to get into your core activity first, because we need to establish you for people who've never heard you before. You are a hypnotherapist, but you started out as a dentist, right? You still are?
Right. No, I retired from dentistry like 25 years ago. My doctorate's in dentistry, but I also have a master's in counseling psychology and undergraduate training in biochemistry. So I have I come across as three professions. One is I have my medical training, which I will never forget, and I use because I treat psychosomatic issues, and I get a lot of referrals from internal medicine specialists, psychiatrists, neurologists. Two is I have the psychological training from the master's in counseling psychology, so I understand the psychological principles. And three, the most important part of who I am is a metaphysician. I'm using New Age principles. Energy healing is what I'm dealing with when it comes to the therapeutic issues that I deal with. Now, I deal with it from a different perspective than most people. I mean, all these different disciplines, you have to understand, is a branch of shamanism. Shamanism is the basis of everything. That's energy healing. Reiki healing, acupuncture, all that represents shamanic disciplines. So this is a subspecialty, namely hypnotherapy. But what I'm dealing with, the basic bottom line before we deal with techniques, is that your life force, the East Indians would call this the prana, the Chinese call it the qi, the Japanese the ki, it's all the same. We call it the subconscious mind or the soul. That's what we're dealing with. And what it is electromagnetic radiation, just like a radio signal or a TV signal. It's electromagnetic radiation, the most common form of radiation, and harmless, by the way, in the universe. Now, the problem with your soul is that your soul, think of it as a physical immune system. Just like your immune system, if it's compromised and somebody sneezes in front of you, you'll catch a cold because the viruses will take over the normal cells. If your immune system is strong, namely, you get plenty of rest, your diet's good, you're not stressed, then you will resist the viruses and you won't catch a cold by the same person sneezing on you. Well, your soul's immune system or energy system functions the same way. If it's compromised, and everybody's is, then the question is, how compromised are you? So what I'm doing is training a patient to introduce their subconscious mind or soul's energy, which is compromised, to the perfect counterpart that we all have. Each of us have what we call a superconscious mind, named by Plato, by the way, 2,300 years ago, or the higher self is what your listeners would be more likely to hear about in the literature.
Got it. So under hypnosis, you are connecting, you say, your average dysfunctional person with the higher self, if the higher self exists, which is a better version of you, essentially. You're repairing. It's almost like repairing a broken internet connection. That's what you're trying
right.
to do.
Very, very nicely put, and I'm glad you're the one that said your average dysfunctional person. But yes, that's exactly. So I like to think of myself as the social director on the karmic cruise ship. Is the way I'm the introducer here. So I'm not really healing people. People think, you know, I go on radio and patients of mine call in and they're very nice people. And I always tell them, don't do this. And they say, Dr. Goldberg cured me of this and that. I don't cure anyone of anything. What cures people, and I mean the word cure, is their higher self, because the higher self comes from the God energy complex. It's perfect and creative energy. The reason why you have spontaneous cures of cancer and AIDS, which there are reported in the literature, and I've had cases, I wrote a book called Soul Healing, where there's a case of cancer and AIDS that were treated through use of these cleansing or energy healing techniques. I don't claim to cure the person, but what happens is the higher self does. Medically, you know, I'm trained medically. Medically, you talk to a physician, they'll tell you it's impossible to cure cancer because once a cell becomes cancerous, it will duplicate DNA-wise itself as a cancerous cell. Well, yeah, the problem is that there are spontaneous cures, and that's medically impossible. Well, it's possible because of the energy changes. The energy of your higher self can actually change the biochemistry of your body, and it does. And that's what this is all about. So the nice thing about this is that this is what we call a form of psychic empowerment. The patient is trained to be independent of me or anyone else eventually, to be able to use their higher self, connect with it, and to solve any problem, to accomplish any goal. And that's what this is all about.
Of course, over here, we have to be very careful about anything that even begins to hint. If you go on broadcast media in this country and you even hint that you might have some kind of cure for cancer, then that gives you an enormous problem. I don't know whether it's the same situation there.
But Howard, here's the thing. I don't have a cure for cancer. The patient does. You see the difference here? It's all done by themselves. It's sort of like, you know, you can give somebody free food or you can teach them how to fish. You see, and what
I understand. So we have, and we all know of these cases, and we read about them in the popular papers over here and around the world all the time, of people who say, I was given 6 weeks to live, I was given 6 months to live, and I decided to change my outlook radically, and I changed my diet, changed my outlook and everything, and here I am, it's been 10 years. We all know of those cases. So what you're saying is you're just simply trying to facilitate that natural process.
Right. Now, there's another example. You know, people call this the placebo effect. And I always have a problem with that because I'm a biochemist by training. And the placebo effect sounds kind of cool. It's a nice rationalization about why people don't want to believe in higher energy forces. They want to be agnostic or atheistic, which is their First Amendment right. But let me tell you what the issue is. In my book, Soul Healing, I quote cases from there's a place in France called Lourdes. You may be familiar with it.
Lourdes, where a lot of people go, mainly right. Roman Catholic people, but not necessarily of that denomination. And they go to this place, and it is claimed that healing can happen there.
What happened is in 1858, a woman by the name of Soubirous apparently allegedly saw the had a contact with the Virgin Mary. That's the issue. The Catholic Church then said it was a holy place, and they had these cold springs. This is by the Pyrenees Mountains between France and Spain. And what happens, people would dive into these very cold waters, and they would cure cancer. And the Rockefeller Institute in New York, very quality institute, back in the early 1900s, like 1905, 1910, they went up there to expose them from Life magazine. That was their concept, because they thought this was all a joke. Well, guess what? They not only did they not expose them, they confirmed it. And the Catholic Church, which is not exactly a liberal institution, has documented or notified over 65 miracles that have occurred there. So what happens is that there were physicians from the Rockefeller Institute that actually witnessed cancer tumors disappearing right before their very eyes after people dove into this water. Now, whether it was the water, you can say it's a placebo effect, whatever went on, it was an energy form of healing, because cancer is a pretty heavy agenda here, okay? Cancer is not a hangnail. It's not a common cold, even though it's viral. It actually kills people. And so my point is that we have cases. If there's one case around the world, and there are hundreds of thousands now, then we know that there's something beyond the typical medical paradigm, which is biochemical and DNA related. So the nice thing about this is that this gives people hope, because it shows them that there's more to, you know, there's more to the universe than that what you and I are led to by the media or by more conventional institutions.
So, but I'm sure you would never suggest, and we couldn't suggest here either, that people do not forego or forsake conventional medical treatment. You wouldn't want anyone to do that, would you?
No, as a matter of fact, I never tell a person to stop seeing their oncologist when I work with people like that. I always say, look, don't give up the medical treatment. This is an adjunct. This is called alternative medicine. So to me, what happens is that usually when I deal with a lot of physician referrals, especially the psychiatrists who refer people for paranoid schizophrenia, for depression, for anxiety, or panic attacks, things like that, those symptoms basically are symptomatic only. Okay, in other words, it's not like diabetes here, okay? There's no real medical cause per se. So what they refer them to me for is to get them off the medication. Because see, modern medicine, or allopathic medicine as it's called, to make it be respectful about it, it doesn't cure anything. It only treats things. You can't cure anything with medicine, with drugs, chemotherapy, surgery. You're treating the symptoms. You're trying to cut out the tumors. That's fine, but they grow back. So my point is that wouldn't it be nice to treat the cause without compromising or interfering with conventional medicine, which I don't, by the way. What happens is if the symptoms disappear and they don't return and the patient no longer needs a symptomatic medication, then it is their physician, not me, that makes the decision and says, you know something, we're done. No more meds. You're fine. Go on with your life. If you have a problem, give me a call back.
So I guess that helps you to avoid what could potentially for you be a legal minefield, in that if somebody gave up a treatment for something, maybe they had some kind of, I don't know, problem with their leg or something, and they gave up that treatment because you were helping them, and then it didn't work out for them, they can't turn around to you and say, Dr. Goldberg said I should do this, and sue you for $1 million.
This is what they call, in the legal field, they would call this a disclaimer, you know. And to me, the disclaimer is, I tell a patient, don't ignore your physician, don't stop taking your meds until they tell you not to. If they ignore my advice and say, I'm going to stop, that's not my issue, that's their issue. Sort of like, you know, in America, we have the funny thing about disclaimers. There is a ironing board there was a notice when somebody buys an iron. No, not the iron board, the iron itself. And this is what the disclaimer was when you buy this iron in America. It says, do not put the iron directly on your body. Make sure the clothes, the shirt, is on an ironing board.
Of course, it's like if you go to McDonald's over here, you buy a cup of coffee, the cup of coffee comes in, I'm sure it's the same in America, says, this cup contains hot liquid.
Well, yeah, but in America, we had the McDonald's case where they had a lawsuit. Somebody filed a $1 zillion lawsuit because they burned themselves when they drank the coffee in a takeout, you know, when they didn't, they spilled the coffee and they didn't sip it nicely, and they sued McDonald's. But anyway, getting back, you want to talk about teleportation. And this is very apropos, because Great Britain and London especially, too, well, the whole country, is the number one area in the world for teleportation cases. It goes back hundreds of years, at least a couple of hundred years in our literature, to modern literature. But teleportation, just for the audience, this is an example example of, this is not out-of-body experiences. This is something much more complicated. Teleportation is when you actually enter into what we call the fifth dimension, which is, by the way, confirmed by modern physics, quantum mechanics and astrophysics all confirms, and the theory of relativity also confirms the fifth dimension. And what you're doing is you're physically moving from one place to another without a vehicle, without anybody dragging you. You just go from point A to point B, which could be thousands of miles away, by using what we call techniques to enter into the fifth dimension. So, and this is not like Star Trek, you know, where you have like little sparkles, you know, and you dematerialize, and forget about that. That's Hollywood, okay? And I'm a consultant to Hollywood, and they don't listen to me sometimes. But let me give you a good example. I'll give you the most documented case of teleportation, then I'll give you a current case to show you how it applies to common people or the apparition today. The most documented case of teleportation, which was documented both by the Catholic Church and by the historical people in Mexico, occurred in 1593. Okay, one evening on October 24, 1593, a Spanish soldier by the name of Gil Perez, by the way, he's very documented, suddenly appeared in the plaza in front of the palace in Mexico City. Now, the reason why he was odd was that his uniform was that of not of the palace guards of Mexico, but he wore the uniform of Spain. Because, you know, Spain as a colony, Mexico as a colony of Spain, the Spanish soldiers would wear a certain uniform and have guns that were very different than the Mexico ones. Now, he said, when they saw him, they said, what are you doing here? You know, the ship isn't here. Where'd you come from? He said, very nervous, he goes, I couldn't help it, but the governor was murdered. I was one of the guards. And they said, the governor of who? Our governor is fine. He said, the governor of Manila. Manila, like the Philippines? And he said, yeah, he was killed, and I was one of the guards, and I couldn't stop it. So they thought he was crazy, loco, as they would call him. They took him into the jail. They interrogated him. This is where the historical people come in. And then, of course, they brought a priest in to exorcise him, because in those days, they thought he was demonically possessed. And they just put him in jail. Now, 2 months later, the ship from Manila, you know, the Spanish government would send their ships around the world, you know, bringing the supplies and checking on their territory, so to speak, just like, you know, London had a few colonies over the years, you know. Okay, so.
Well, only one or two.
One or two, yes. Not many left now. Okay. Anyway, so now 2 months later, it's Christmas time. The ship comes into Mexico City from Manila. And of course, they bring the news. They didn't have CNN in those days, you know, or the BBC, okay? So what happens is that they said, you know, we have something to tell you. One of the news here is that the governor of Manila was murdered. And they said, really? When? Oh, October 25th, actually. And they said, or 24th, and they said, really, we have a guy in jail we'd like you to see. And they bring the guy to the jail. He says, that's Gil Perez. He's one of the guards. He was there. He's documented as being there. You don't go from Manila, Philippines to Mexico City, which is 9,000 miles away, in 1593 in a matter of a few hours or a few seconds. You go there, it takes 2 months by ship. So therefore, that's the most documented case. By the way, they released him, they put him on the ship, he went back to Manila, and he went back to doing his guard duty, preferably a little bit more successful than he was before. But here we have a complete documentation of the most documented case of over 400 years ago of teleportation.
And how do we know that he did that? How do we know that that actually happened? And how do we know that he believed that happened?
Because when you interrogate somebody, you know, if somebody brings you in, if one of your London bobbies arrests you and brings you in an interrogation room, they have a chart on you. They have a file. Okay, they keep records. Mexico City did the same thing 400 years ago. We have records going back to ancient Rome. We have divorce cases in ancient Rome and Socrates' transcript of his trial, you know, 2,300 plus years ago. So, I mean, antiquity, people kept records. It wasn't just the Germans and the Russians, you know. People kept records for thousands of years. So we know that. The Catholic Church also kept records of that. Every time they do a demonic exorcism, they kept records of that. So the Catholic Church and the historians in Mexico City all have records of Gil Perez. We know his name. I mean, the guy was, you know. So what he did was, what is interesting about Gil Perez, though, it's a little bit more strange than that, because what happened was that it was actually the morning of October 25th when the governor was murdered. His name was Don Perez Das Maranas. He was murdered on the morning of October 25th, 1593. So Gil Perez, not only did he teleport 9,000 miles away, but he went back in time by 12 hours because he arrived in Mexico City on the evening of October 24th, you see? So when you teleport, you can go back or forward in time, not just travel from one location to another.
This sounds very, very good, Bruce, and it is a fascinating story, and I'm sure there's lots more detail to do with it. I have been looking for my show, The Unexplained, which I've been doing for a good long time, for somebody who has or can, has teleported or can teleport. I can't find anybody. So if it's as common as all that, where are the teleportees?
Well, you're talking to actually one of them. I'll tell you my story in a moment, but let me give you a more common example of one of my patients. I call her Vivian. By the way, this is in my latest book, Exploring the Fifth Dimension, which deals with teleportation, out-of-body experiences, and parallel universes, which we'll discuss too if you want. But let's talk about Vivian's case. Vivian's case is very interesting. This is a woman who lives in Los Angeles, and she's dating a guy who is an idiot. He's an abuser. He physically beats her up, and she's very wimpy and insecure. She can't break up with the guy. So one day they're on the freeway in Los Angeles. If you've ever been in Los Angeles, we have freeways that people drive like crazy idiots, okay? And they're having an argument, which is not unusual. And they're in the freeway. And what he does is this idiot opens up the passenger door and throws this woman out in the middle of the freeway going 75 miles an hour.
Oh, my God.
Okay? Now, what happens was that she twisted her ankle, which, you know, so she couldn't walk or run. And there's a car coming in the opposite direction at about 75, 80 miles an hour. She was working with me, and I was training her in the art of teleportation, which is it's the most difficult technique in the world to do. And there's a post-hypnotic suggestion I gave her when she wants to teleport as we're going through the training, and she remembered that. So she was panicking because she's about to be killed by this guy. He's coming right at her, 80 miles an hour.
Hold on, you're saying that she remembered in this split second when she's out of that car and there's a car heading for her, she remembered your trick and tool.
Correct. Now, what happens was she says this little thing, she does this little thing. Immediately, the next thing she knows, she's back in her living room in her apartment nursing a twisted ankle. Now, what happened was the guy in the car, her idiot boyfriend, sees a car going right through her. In other words, the car stopped, both cars stopped because they're thinking, where is this woman? They just went right because she disappeared literally by entering in the fifth dimension, teleporting several miles away to her apartment and saving her life. I didn't save her life, she did. And eventually she was able to break up with this guy and go on with her life. But the point is, that's an example of a current day, this occurred about 5 or 6 years ago, of a current day example of teleportation.
That now, is an amazing story on so many levels, Bruce. How come it wasn't top story on CNN?
Well, you understand that this woman is a very conservative person working for a company. If she was going on the local news, she would have lost her job. See, most people, the reason why you have a hard time dealing with people, I'll tell you my story in a moment, and I don't have any problem doing this. So I'm not exactly shy, but as you know, but the point is that most of the people who have teleportation cases will never come forward, just like most people who see UFOs don't want to come forward either because they're afraid of the community they live in, their jobs. People are going to think they're a freak. They're not going to trust them. They're going to have problems with their family. So that's why you have a problem with it's like a woman who gets raped and she doesn't report it because the defense attorney is going to make her out like a prostitute, right? That's the mentality. But let me tell you my story.
Before you do that, can I just say that I have a lot of rightly skeptical listeners, some of them verging on the cynical about these things, which is fine. You know, people have to question, otherwise it's not a great society we have. Right. It's very convenient that so many of these people fear for their jobs and being seen as insane and all the rest of it, so they don't come out and admit to this. You would think that at least one person or two people somewhere would come out and say, yes, this happened to me. You know, not everybody's afraid for their job.
There's no videotape. I mean, they could say, look, I teleported. How do you know they're telling you the truth? They're just looking for attention. I mean, they want their 15 minutes of fame. So that's why teleportation cases are never going to be proven to the skeptic. Number one, let me give you my definition of a skeptic first. There's a difference between being objectively cynical or scientific about it versus skeptic. My definition of a skeptic is that if a UFO landed in their backyard, they would bury it and hope nobody saw it land. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between being open-minded and being a narrow-minded jerk. Okay. And many of them claim this to be scientists. Well, most scientists are agnostic or atheistic, which by definition is subjective and narrow-minded. Okay. You know. Okay. Let me give you my story first. I'll show you an example.
Let's just interrupt that for 30 seconds before you do. I want to hear your story.
Okay.
But I just want to make one point here. This woman came to you. I don't want to lose this really good case study, right? This woman's story. She came to you for help with that terrible abuse situation that she wanted desperately out of. And eventually, thankfully, she did get out of. How did you get to the situation in sessions with her where you suggested, well, I can teach you a way to teleport. If this guy is going to beat you up or something, you can teleport your way out of that. Is that how this happened?
That wasn't the reason why I worked with her at teleportation. She had read my other books. You know, I've written 21 books and I've been in this field for 40 years. So she knows my reputation and she had a great interest in metaphysics. So she asked me, she said, look, I was reading your stories about teleportation. Is that real or what? And I said, yeah. She goes, well, I would like to try that. So she requested to me to train her in the concept of teleportation.
All right. Well, here's something that I want to suggest to you. I doubt that you'll be able to do it, but I want to put it there. I am a journalist. I'm an honest guy. I'm not a skeptical jerk, as you put it. I'm a very open-minded person.
Okay.
If you could put me in touch with her, we can give her total anonymity, and I will talk with her here. We can disguise her voice. We can use all the broadcast techniques, and I'll put her on this show.
Okay, let me talk. Again, I have to respect her privacy. If she wants to do it, that's fine. I will communicate with her in the next few days, and I'll let you know. If she wants to do it, I will definitely communicate with you. And I have to understand, confidentiality is everything with me. So if she says yes, and if I say to her, okay, do you mind if I give him your number, whatever, she says fine, I will text her or email you the information, no problem, okay?
But again, tell her two things. Tell her, one, my name really is Howard Hughes, and two, I am a nice guy. I hope.
Yes, I'll tell that you don't have fingernails that are 4 feet long. I got it. Okay.
All right, let's hear your story.
All right, here's my story. In 1977, it was between Christmas and New Year's, around December 28th. I was in Baltimore, Maryland. I lived there for many years. I went to dental school there. And it was very cold, and really cold, like 12 degrees outside. And I just said to myself, you know, it was 1985. I was thinking back to my favorite vacation, which was 1977, which was around Christmas time, and I was in Montego Bay, Jamaica. The best vacation I ever had in my entire life. It's a great island. It's fun, you know, and whatever. It looks like the filming of King Kong there. It's a great island. Okay. So I said to myself, you know, I really wish I was in Montego Bay right now. Now, this was on a Sunday, and I had a new patient coming in on Monday, the following morning. On the previous Friday, just 2 days before that, one of my local patients was telling me one of her cousins from out of town was going to be in town, and she had arranged for the appointment. And she said, my cousin's looking forward to seeing you, right? Okay. So meanwhile, I can't go anywhere. It's Sunday, and the following day, I've got new patients coming in. So I said to myself, well, why don't I just teleport? So I go into my living room. I remember it's December 28th now. It's like 12 degrees outside. And in my house, which is nice and heated, I've got my miniature schnauzers, Karma and Phoenix at the time. Okay. Karma the first and Phoenix the first. Now I have Karma the third. I changed into my bathing suit, wore my little Zoris, had my copper tone.
What are Zoris?
Oh, those are like little slippers you wear at the beach. You know,
okay,
they're like
flip-flops.
Yeah, flip-flops, yeah, we call them Zoris here. So I go on the couch, and I'm lying down, and those days I was using cassettes, and I played my teleportation tape, which was a cassette in those days, and my dogs looked at me like, what, are you crazy? What's going on here, you know? So the next thing I know, I'm on the beach. It's Montego Bay, and the beach is empty, except it's vacant, except there's one woman, a kind of a cute college-age kind of brunette on a beach towel, right? And I walk up, I'm only a few feet away from her, and she looks at me, and she goes, where'd you come from? I mean, this is the beach was vacant, and you can't run fast on the beach, you know, with the sand. And I said, well, I travel pretty quickly. Do you mind if I put my towel down? She goes, okay. So we're talking, and we go swimming, and we spend the afternoon there, right? And she says, you know, how long are you going to be in town? And I said, well, my flight leaves quickly, soon. I can't tell you how long I'm going to be here, but it's not going to be long. Well, the next thing I know, I'm back in my house in Baltimore. And people say, oh, doctor, you had an out-of-body experience or you had a crazy dream.
I was going to say, this is, you know, this is the kind of thing that a lot of us dream about, but never really happens.
But let me complete the story now. Here's what you can't do with hypnosis. I've been doing hypnosis for over 40 years. I've done every technique in the world. This is what you cannot do. As I go into the full-length mirror in my living room with my two dogs looking at me like I'm weird, I see myself, A, with a suntan, B, my bathing suit is wet, C, there are sand, beach sand, on my little Zoris and in my bathing suit. How do I get that in Baltimore in December 28th? Obviously, the only way you can explain that, you can't do suntan, by the way, by hypnosis suggestions, okay? It doesn't work. So therefore, I had the physical evidence that I actually traveled out of my house to a very warm environment and got a suntan. You don't get a suntan in Baltimore on December 28th, nor do you do that in London either. You don't get it in July either sometimes. But so my point here is that, so here's the example. But let me give you a more modern case of documentation.
Before you do that, you met somebody there. Now, if yes. I teleported myself to somewhere wonderful, and God, would I like to do that right now, in the middle of this British wet winter, And I met somebody there, and I was thinking to myself, oh my God, I've actually done this. The teleportation works. I would say, really nice to meet you. And if, you know, we had a lunch or a drink or whatever, and my flight leaves very soon, I would say, before I go, would it be okay? Can I have your email address or your phone number? Yeah. There would be a great way to verify that story because somebody else was involved.
Right. Well, the problem here with that, again, remember, we're dealing with people that are very skeptical and are not exactly protagonists to the field. This is almost like in politics. You know, you're either conservative or liberal and nobody wants to hear the other side. You know, you get this fixed mentality. If you did that, how would you prove that? In other words, you'd have to have airline things, whatever. You'd have to have documentation, timestamps. There are so many ways people would say it was fudge. Just like when you see a videotape of something that looks really weird, people think, oh, it's Hollywood. It's trick photography. Nobody believes anyone.
Yes and no. I mean, if she said, okay, here's the journalist in me coming out. I know it's boring, but we've got to go there. I'd have said, please verify this. Please verify for the world what time you saw me. And then there must be somebody in Baltimore, somebody back home, who would also have seen you around that time. Put the two together, and there you have copper bottom cast iron story. Why didn't you do that?
Well, like in my case, you could say you could check all the airlines and see that he didn't fly anywhere. He didn't book a plane. How do you go from Baltimore to Montego Bay, Jamaica? The problem is the airlines don't keep records 30 years later is the problem, you see? So that's why. But let me give you a different case that shows, because you're in the media, because you're aware of copyright laws. I'm sure you have the same thing in Britain.
Oh, we do. You
copyright videotapes and audio things. You know, everything is books. They're all copyrighted. Okay, copyright is like a court document. It's stamped. You can't fudge copyright. So let me show you why copyright's relevant here. Let's go back to the year 1948 in Cloquet, Minnesota, in America here, in the colonies. There was a man named Charles W. Ingersoll who owned a radio station and was working very hard and just really wanted to go to the Grand Canyon. He was fixated. He says, I want to take a vacation. I want to take my family to the Grand Canyon. Well, his radio station was very busy and he couldn't do it in 1948. So he just didn't do it. We fast forward now to the year 1955. And now he has time to go to the Grand Canyon on vacation, right? So he takes he buys a Bosley 35mm slide camera, and then he goes with his family to the Grand Canyon and taking pictures and, you know, whatever, and doing his thing, whatever. He comes back to Minnesota, and then he goes into one of his local photo shops. Now remember, this is 1955. Things are different. There was no internet in those days. And he buys one of those travel films. This was called the Castle Film Company. They made all these travel logs, you know, people could see what it's like to go to various cities or countries in the world, you know, instead of going there themselves. And he's thinking, let me just see what the Grand Canyon looks like by a travel log. So he goes there. The travel log is copyrighted 1948, okay? Remember, the year he wanted to go but didn't. As he goes home and plays this travelogue on an 8mm film, guess what he sees? Himself at the Grand Canyon with his 1955 Bosley 35mm camera, which was made and manufactured in 1955. The only way you can have that on a copyrighted film is for him to go teleport and go backwards in time by 7 years, just like Gil Perez went backwards in time by 12 hours when he teleported in 1593. Now, that's documentation.
How did he know it was him? It could have been somebody who just looked a bit like him.
Well, his case was actually very well known, and it was documented by several media sources here in the States and stuff. But remember, you have to understand, when you do things like that, you know, let me show you why the scientific community will never cooperate. You know, there's a man named Robert Shoke. He's a geologist in Boston University, in Boston, Massachusetts. He went to the Giza Plateau in Cairo to take pictures of the Sphinx in 1992. He took pictures. Now, remember, this is before digital cameras, so he had regular 35mm, whatever he had. And he takes pictures of the head, the paws, the body, you know, the body of the lion, the Sphinx in Cairo. He goes to a convention in San Diego several months later. He's a speaker at this annual geologist meeting in San Diego, California. And he shows the picture of the body of the Sphinx, not the head or the paws, just the body. Now, you remember, there's two kinds of erosion. You have sand erosion, which is horizontal, and water erosion, which is vertical. As he shows the body of the Sphinx to the colleagues, he says, guys, what is this? And they said, what is this? Geology 101? This is water erosion. Then he shows them the whole picture. And they said, we're not going to say this publicly. Because in order for it to be water erosion of the Sphinx in Cairo, you have to go back to 7,000 BC, the last time Cairo, the Sahara Desert, was a rainforest. And that means that the Sphinx is at least 9,000 years old. And no one today is going to mention that in a new history book, okay? They don't do that, even though the water erosion is absolute fact. There's no way in the world it was anything but water erosion. Do the science book change? The history books change? The answer is no, because people don't like to break paradigms. We call this forbidden archaeology. There are many books written about it. Cremo and Thompson's famous book of 1993 called Forbidden Archaeology will give you thousands of cases of this where the scientific community does not like to admit they're wrong. And this is the mentality. So when you're trying to prove metaphysics, which by definition is a subjective field, remember, regular physicists hate quantum mechanics. Quantum mechanics says that nothing happens unless you observe it. There's no objectivity. It's all subjective. That goes against science. That's what goes against my entire training as a scientist. So you see the problem here is you have the issue here is of paradigms, of narrow-mindedness versus true objectivity. And so you really can't prove reincarnation. You can't disprove it. There are too many documented cases and there are too many phony cases.
Have you ever been tempted then, because you are very well known, I mean, you are very well known in the US and I'm sure you have lots of international clients. People know you. Have you never thought of putting out a news release one of these days saying, okay, teleportation is real, and on this date, at this time, and with this person, I am going to prove it to you?
Well, okay, you know, the problem is that it's not a controllable phenomenon. You can't just do it. I mean, the old joke is, you want to see teleportation? Okay, you want to see it again? I mean, you know...
Yes, but if you pick a number of random subjects to cooperate with you, and if you do this over a period of time, surely it's going to work at least once.
Well, the problem is, again, it's the timing involved. It can take months to do this, okay? So the question is how...
But wouldn't you like to prove it, Bruce?
I know, but what is the attention span of the media? You know, I would compare it to maybe a squirrel, you know? I mean, you're talking about people want things done yesterday, especially nowadays with technology, with computers, with instant this and Instagrams and digital things and texting and whatever. It's just not, if it was a predictable phenomenon, believe me, I would have done this years ago, decades ago. It's just not predictable.
But you did it for that woman who saved herself from that terrible car accident. You were able to do it for her.
Do it. She did it. Remember the difference here. I didn't wave my magic wand.
But
like
you say you facilitated it for her.
I trained her. No, I trained her, but she did it. She did it herself. Just like when I did it, I've tried teleportation many times and failed. This was one time when it actually worked, which was great. But most of the time, it's a failure, you know. But to me, I'm just telling you right now. No matter what you do, if you have all the documentation, somebody out there, the skeptic, not the person who's open-minded or the protagonist, the skeptic is going to say, "Nah, it's a scam. It's some Hollywood trick. This guy's from Los Angeles, probably." Smoking dope and dealing with his producer friends. You're not going to convince anyone of anything. I'm telling you
right
now. But
if I were you, you're a very successful guy. I'm assuming that living where you live and having the business that you have, you probably are not in great need of cash right now. So you've got nothing to lose. Now would be your time to do this and to do this for the world. Wouldn't you want to?
Well, of course I would, and like I'm just saying that, I just have a life here too, and to me, sitting there trying to arrange all the paradigms with the idea that let's just wait and see if it happens, and then over and over again, and maybe waiting for hours and days and weeks at a time, I'm not in a scientific project here. I mean, this would be something a university should do. Some you know, Duke University in America or Stanford University in California, those are the people that have that their life is based upon wasting time doing research, okay? That's their responsibility, not mine. My responsibility is to be a clinician, not to be a researcher. There's a big difference here.
And Bruce, do you fear that if you did go too far and you did go public in that sort of way, do you fear that perhaps you might get a knock on your door? Maybe you've had one already from a couple of guys in black suits and dark glasses.
Oh, the men in black know who I am. I have a FBI and CIA file big enough to fill up your studio there. I'm sure.
How do you know that?
Well, I know that because, you know, I even requested my own records in the Freedom of Information Act here.
Really?
Released in 1974, I requested my FBI file, and all I got was a bunch of blacked out pages, and they said that's, they redacted or dacted, whatever they call it. They did that. I don't know what's in there. I mean, you know, look, with all due respect, I go on Coast to Coast with George Norrie. I'm sure you know the show.
Yes,
in America, right? premier radio, you know, Coast Clear Channel Communications. It's got a 10 million audience all around the world. People from your country listen to it. Like, I get calls and whatever. And,
hey, Bruce, I've listened to it for years. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I've done about 80 interviews with that network in the last 20 years, okay, and about 40 or 50 of them with George, who's a good friend. My point is that anyone who goes on that show, you're going to have a file. Okay. Now, the Men in Black don't bother me. I don't get black helicopters. Nobody knocks on my door. My phone isn't being tapped, to my knowledge. But they know who I am. But they don't care because they think I'm harmless. If I was preaching overthrow of the government or trying to release a UFO in my backyard, then I would have a problem. But to me, doing what I do, they don't really care. I don't have that problem. But my point is that with cases like Ingersoll's, cases like Gil Perez, those are objectively confirmed. And even though they're old cases, in certain 400 years in case, and one's about, you know, almost 65 years old or more, my point is that they're still, that's not my job. My job is to be a clinician and to train people to do their own thing. But here's an example of, I'll tell you something that to show you how people can actually benefit. We talked about a teleportation. The other end of the spectrum is what I call classic out-of-body experiences, which is very well documented, OBEs as we call them. Here's a case of a woman. She was a college student from New York City. She graduated from college in June of 1996. Now, the reason why the date's important is you'll see in a moment. She reads my, CBS television did a movie for television on one of my documented cases of reincarnation called The Search for Grace, a case that they documented, by the way, not me. Very well documented case, a beautiful case of a woman who was obsessed to attract to a guy who was trying to murder her, and she finally was able to break the pattern, and she had a documented case in Buffalo, New York in 1927. It's a long story, but it's a beautiful film, and there's a book on it. Of course, it was based on my second book. All right, so now this woman sees the television movie in New York. A couple of years later, she says, you know, I want to see this guy. I want to learn how to do out-of-body experiences because I've also written books on out-of-body experience. Okay, so she calls me up and says, can I see you? I said, sure. So a lot of my patients come internationally, you know, from across the country. So she comes here in June of 1996. I work with her for about 5 days. And while she's in town, the 5 days that she's here, she's going out of the body, and she tells me she sees events that occur the following day while she's in Los Angeles, or 2 days later. And sure enough, three or four of these incidences actually occurred, things that were beyond her control, like meeting a guy with a tie-dye t-shirt in a bookstore and having a date with him, or going to the beach and some other guy comes up to her, whatever. So so she's got a good track record. So now she goes home and she says, doctor, you know, I'm going to Europe for the summer. I'm going to go to Paris in July, and then I'm going to go run around with my girlfriends. I'm going to come back and go to graduate school. And I said, fine, have a nice life, you know. And so I said, you're welcome to communicate with me in the future anytime. So now she calls me up 3 weeks later. It's the end of June, 1996. And her name is Tammy, by the way. It's not a real name. That's what I call her. So Tammy calls me up. She goes, doctor, this is Tammy, and I have an emergency. And I said, Tammy, look, I retired from dentistry to get away from that. What's going on? And she said, I was using your tapes and going out of the body, and I wanted to see how my trip is going to be. I'm going to go to Paris next month. And I said, okay. She says, I see myself taking off from the airport to JFK. My plane goes up in the air, immediately crashes. Everybody, including me, dies. What do I do? And I said, Tommy, you know, I don't want to run your life. I'm really an empowered person, and I believe in taking charge of your life. Why don't you just change your flight plans and give me a call at the end of the summer? She goes, well, that's a good idea. Brilliant, right? Okay. So now she calls me right before Labor Day, which is when usually school starts here in the States. She calls me the end of August or August 31st, whatever, and she says, doctor, this is Tammy. And I said, hi, Tammy, how you doing? And she says, I want you, she told me something I never want a patient to ever tell me. And she says, doctor, you saved my life. And I said, no, I didn't. What happened? She was going to go on TWA Flight 800. July 17th, 1996, I'm sure you got the drift there. That flight left TWA, left JFK. The plane went up in the air. The jet went up in the air, immediately crashed. All 230 people, all crew, all passengers died. She would have been 231. So by going out of the body, entering the fifth dimension, the space-time continuum, which is scientifically documented, by the way, she was able to see into the future, because when you leave the body, you now are in the space-time continuum. Not only can you travel past, present, and future, as in teleportation, but you can perceive the future by doing that.
And was she seeing, Bruce, her own future, or was she seeing a vision of the things that would transpire to the things that she was about to do? In other words, she would know that she was booked on that plane. She looked into what would happen there, and she saw that. Or was she seeing herself on that plane?
Well, no, she was seeing the future. The former is the answer. She wasn't seeing herself on the plane. She was just seeing the plane, okay? Because she obviously wasn't on that plane.
So now, she didn't actually change fate. She just saw something that was going to happen to something she was going to do.
Her plans were to go on TWA Flight 800. If she hadn't done this, she would have gone on the flight and died. There's no question about that.
I'm saying is that she wasn't actually seeing herself dying in that vision. She was seeing what actually transpired. And just one quick thing. If she saw that, why didn't she alert the authorities about that?
Because the authorities wouldn't give a rat's butt about it. They get complaints all the time saying, you know, I had this vision and I think your plane's going to crash. And they say, yeah, but the odds are 9,999-1 that it's going to happen. No authority is ever going to cancel a plane because some psychic or some woman who's not even a psychic, just a college student, calls them up and says, cancel your flight because it's going to crash.
Totally understand that. But if I was her, I'd be traumatized by that to this day. It's 20-odd years ago.
She there's nothing she could do. So it's not like she caused the issue. I mean, today you would probably consider to be a terrorist, you know, with the Homeland Security if that happened today.
No, but you know what I'm saying? The knowledge that something is going to happen, and even if you are powerless, because nobody's going to listen to you, we know that. Right. But the fact is you'd want to make that call, wouldn't you?
Well, I would, but she didn't because she realized, remember, she's a New Yorker. You know, New York is a different ballgame, okay? New York is, there's a certain apathy among New Yorkers and there's a certain idea about, like, there's nothing I can do and there's a certain helplessness and hopelessness in New York when you're one of the little people, so to speak. But let me tell you something that'll make it a little more complicated and more interesting. In a parallel universe, she died. Remember, we're dealing with the space-time. Parallel universes are real. By the way, people can make fun of it and forget about the Hollywood films and all the usual junk that you hear and see. Parallel universes come out of the theory of relativity. They come out of the string theory, and they come out of the M theory today. So parallel universes are real. On a parallel universe, she died because every time you have a thought, you're creating a new parallel universe. And this is in the space-time continuum.
And is it possible easily for – I mean, look, I'm a genuine seeker after truth. If I came to you and said, look, I would love to look into the alternative realities for myself. There are a number of decisions that I've made in my life, and this is true, okay, that may not have been the best decisions that I've ever made. They certainly weren't. Some of the things I did when I was younger, some of the people who departed my life, some of the radio stations that I should have stayed at and left, that kind of stuff. Could I go and look at what might have been?
Actually, not only what might have been, but you can actually, let me tell you something that's really cool. This is something that I wrote a book called Custom Design Your Own Destiny, where I documented technique. It's called the New You Technique. And I actually trained people to switch paths. And again, you're talking to somebody who did it himself. In 1993, I was working with a writer friend of mine. This was the CBS project, The Search for Grace. It was a TV movie, what they call MOW here. And he was doing the teleplay, which is a script for a television movie versus a screenplay for a feature film. His name is Alex, first name. And Alex was very panicking because Alex is the kind of guy where, you know, I'm sure you know people in the creative fields, no matter how much money they make, they always need money. You know what I mean? Okay, well, Alex was one of them, okay? And he was calling me up in a panic because the television movie had not been greenlit to be filmed. He was writing on the third treatment, and he said, Bruce, he says, look, you know, they won't air it. There's a problem. And I said, well, what's the problem? He says, well, one of the producers and whatever. I said, look, I'll take care of it. He says, the network doesn't want to hear from you. And I said, I'm not going to call the network. He says, but I will take care of it. He says, oh, I know what you're going to do. You're going to do one of your weird techniques, right? And I said, what do you got to lose? Okay, just chill out, okay? So what I did was I went, by using my techniques, I went into the fifth dimension, perceived my various parallel frequencies or parallel universes, of which there are five major ones. And the one I was on, the movie was never going to air. The one that it did air, which is I'll call frequency number four in this five paradigm mentality, not only did the movie air, but there are several events that were to occur over the next 15 or so years, which I had no control over. Okay, well, guess what? I switched tracks. The movie aired on May 17th, 1994, exactly 67 years to the hour when the woman died in her past life. And many of the other incidents over the next 15 years occurred and came true as I perceived them, which means the only way that could have happened logically is that I switched from one parallel universe to the other. So you and I are on a different parallel universe than I was 15, 20 years ago. You know, see how it works? It's called the New You Technique, and it's absolutely backed by quantum mechanics and backed by the string theory and the M theory.
Can I tell you something? I would personally, and I'm sure that I've got thousands of people listening to you right now, I'd love this to be true, because how many of us would like to change things? An awful lot.
I'll tell you the request I get. The people want to change things. Or people, somebody may have lost an arm or a leg or gone blind. Somebody may have been convicted of a crime and they want to get rid of it. An ex-wife, you know, little things like that. Problems with the government, the IRS, whatever it is. The point is that that's what people contact me, because me, you know, my books are in 20 different languages, and Customs on Your Own Destiny is a big seller for that reason, because it deals with switching tracks. This is what I call empowerment. In other words, you're not. There's nothing you can do about certain things. You can't change the past in this frequency. It's it. That's it. But what you can do is, if you switch tracks, what happens to the life that you're going on right now? Nothing. It goes on. You're just not aware of it. Think of the switching tracks as this way. If you're watching a show on your telly in London and you're watching a certain network, let's say you're watching BBC or you're getting ABC from America, whatever, and then you say, somebody calls you up and says, you know, Howard, why don't you switch channels to, let's say, NBC? There's a, you know, the Olympics is on or whatever's on. And you do that. What happens to the television signal, the electromagnetic radiation?
Well, we know it goes on.
It goes on, but you're not aware of it. So when you switch parallel universes, all you're doing is changing channels. The other parallel universes will go on. On one frequency, Tammy died on July 17th, 1996. On this current frequency, she's alive because she didn't take the flight. There are all these probabilities.
Well, if I flipped to another better frequency and life was hunky-dory there, a little part of me would want to flip back to the present. And, you know, if the present was particularly crap, as they say, yeah. I would rather like to go and help myself out in the current reality. Is that allowed? Can that be done?
No, actually, you're now violating universal laws, because you have to understand one thing about the universe. Because people, you have to understand, I get a lot of people, I know they mean well on certain levels, but, you know, our species is a very selfish species. A lot of people like personal, what I call personal titillation. The universe is not here for yours or my titillation or benefit. The universe exists. If you follow universal laws, you will grow spiritually and you will benefit. If not, you're going to be punished. It's as simple as that. So using the universe to try to win lottery tickets, these are the idiot, you know, things that say, I want to get a horse race result or a lottery ticket, you know, all that kind of stuff. If the universe feels it's relevant, it will. Many years ago, about 30 years ago, I was doing a radio show in Baltimore. It was an overnight radio show. And one of my patients called in one night. And again, this is, I wish this guy never called in. He was a guy who worked for General Motors as on the plant. He was a blue collar worker, you know, putting automobiles together. Okay, and he got injured seriously, which a lot of people do for General Motors or the other, you know, Ford or whatever. And he had to retire on disability, so he couldn't work as a General Motors employee anymore. So he was on disability. He had a wife and a couple of teenage kids. Nobody respected him because he was considered to be like a loser. He was disabled, you know, and he had a lot of problems. And he comes to me and he says, "Doctor," he says, "I just want to get a life here." And he says, "I would like to establish a little business." Remember, this is 30 years ago. And I said, "So what do you need for this business?" He goes, "Well, I need a loan for like $5,000 and no bank will loan me." So I said, "Okay, let's try my new U technique and let's see if you can you know, do something with it." So I don't hear from him. Okay, we're done. Now, 4 or 5 years later, I'm on the radio. He calls me up. He had a very unusual voice. So I'll never forget his voice. You know, voice never changes as you age. And he calls up and he says, "I'm a former patient of Dr. Goldberg, and let's say his name is Carl." And I said, "Okay, Carl, how you doing? I haven't spoken to you. What's going on?" He says, "I want to tell your audience what happened." So he tells me about the story. Then he says, "I saw a lottery number ticket for the Maryland State Lottery, and I won exactly $5,000, which is what I needed to start my business. My business works. I'm very successful. I improved my relationship with my wife and children, and I really have a great life right now," even though he's still disabled, right? And I said, "Carl, I wish you would have told me this off the air." Because the following Monday morning, this was an overnight Saturday night radio show, I got calls from every tout, pimp, you name it. Okay, everybody was calling me for the wrong thing. I don't control that. The universe said, "We're going to give him a $5,000 lottery ticket win. We're not going to make him a super millionaire. We're not going to make him win $300 million. We're going to give him enough money to accomplish a goal." And he earned it and he deserved it. So that's where the universe comes in. You can't violate universal laws. Those are the only laws that count. And the universe is perfectly designed by, I think, a perfect energy force, because I do believe in a God energy complex. And so to me, we can work within the laws, but you can't use it for your own advantage.
But if there is, Bruce, I'm sorry to interrupt. If there is a cosmic plan like this, and I'd love to believe there is, I sincerely hope there is, right, and that I'll benefit from it one of these days. But if there is a cosmic plan, then how come you are allowed to facilitate people, I won't say violating, but using techniques like the ones you've described, like the teleportation and all that? Surely they go against the cosmic plan.
No, it doesn't actually, because if it went against the cosmic plan, nothing could happen. The reason why I'm allowed to do this is because I'm an educator and facilitator. Just like, you know, when we discovered that the world isn't flat, you know, if you go online, there's a flat Earth society. There are idiots that actually believe the Earth is still flat. We have all these discoveries. You know, why aren't we living in caves? You know, I mean, our species hasn't changed in 200,000 years. If you do the archaeology and paleontology, Homo sapiens sapiens, our species has been around for 200,000 years. How come we didn't have cell phones in ancient Greece? Some of the greatest minds in history go back to ancient Greece. Both the Plato, the Socrates, all these scientists, and the raw materials of the Earth haven't changed in the last 2,300 years. So why now? What's interesting is that we have technology spurts, as we call them. Interesting enough, every time there's a wave of UFO sightings, we get technology. You think there's a correlation there between that? Interesting. Think about it. Roswell, we have computers that are shrunk down. 1903, Kitty Hawk. In 1895 in America, 1895 and 96, we had UFO sightings before they were called UFOs. So every time there's UFO sightings, you know, maybe there's an exchange of, we'll give you the technology, you give us the abductees, you know, mentality. So my point is that there are rules that control the way our society is created, but we should not be where we are today, or we should have been where we are today literally thousands of years ago. But so there's a reason why things are progressing now geometrically. And my point is, and I love technology, but my point is I can't control the universe, neither can you. So we get benefits and we have things that work. But at the same time, you know, you can't get everything you want. You have to. The universe makes its final decision, not us. We can only put a proffer out there, try to do our thing correctly with a good moral ethical code and show appreciation. And if you do that, then you're more likely to benefit. If you're going to be a selfish jerk, then you're not going to benefit. Simple as that. Why do you think The Secret doesn't work anymore? Remember how The Secret was big about 4 or 5 years ago?
Yes, I'd forgotten about that. Yes, it was huge.
Look, The Secret was actually a guy called Wallace D. Wattles. In 1910, he wrote a book called The Science of Getting Rich. And what he was reporting back, if you go back philosophically to ancient Greece, to Liebenhauer, and all these 18th century, 17th century philosophers, they all knew The Secret, which was basically, there's something called the original substance. Do you ever wonder why we never run out of stuff? You notice how we never run out of oil? We never run out of paper, trees? Where do all the trees come from? You know how much paper is used in the legal system and publishing industry? We never run out of this stuff, oil. You know how many millions of gallons are used every day in America? We use 25% of the world's oil.
Yes, energy. But you can't say that the stocks of it are not diminishing. They are, and the rainforests are disappearing.
The point, I'm not trying to be arrogant, I'm not trying to be an anti-environmentalist, although I don't firmly believe in the nth degree of the global warming, okay? I'm not an Al Gore fan. Look what's going on today with the coldness, right? But the point is that I'm not saying we shouldn't be conserve an environment. You know, Teddy Roosevelt is my favorite U.S. president, and he developed conservation, the first conservationist 100 years ago, more than 100 years ago. My point is that we just never – where do we get all the cows from? You know how many hamburgers are sold in America every day? I mean, by McDonald's and Wendy's and all these places, we never seem to run out of stuff. And this is what the original substance comes in. So what The Secret was saying, or well, The Secret, let's just call Wallace D. Wattles, here's a better book, he's the real book, is that if you follow universal laws, the universe is created by a perfect energy source and will give us and help us get along. And if you follow the universal laws, you will benefit by it. You will become affluent, attain abundance. You will develop great relationships. You will develop a happier lifestyle. Rather than being a compulsive, materialistic, compulsive spending, addictive person that most people are today, especially in America. I live in America where if I was to wave a magic wand and eliminate compulsive spending, my country would go bankrupt overnight, literally. Okay, compulsive spending keeps America alive with capitalism and all the toys that we have and all this stuff.
Creating demand, which is what a capitalist economy does, that's what keeps it all going, isn't it? Creating demand for things that we may not necessarily need, but we're told we want.
Well, of course. I mean, you don't need 5 cars in your driveway, okay? If you got a wife and 1 child or 2 children, you don't need 5 cars, okay? You don't need 10 cell phones either, okay? So I'm not saying people can do whatever they want. The problem is that, you know, America, I live in a country which the lowest savings rate of any technologically advanced society. It's like 2%, you know, and people are in debt. and they make stupid decisions. It's also, we're also 50% of the illegal drug recreational drug market, and we're 5% of the world's population. That should give you an idea about the compulsive behavior and the lack of intelligence and discipline that my country, men and women, represent. My point is that they're welcome to their opinion. It's their free will. You see, you can't, one thing about the difference between capitalism and democracy versus fascism and communism and all the idiot mentalities and whatever, is that we have the free will right to do things. We can make our own errors. We're not prohibited from doing a zillion things as they are in those other countries. And the problem is, people have a right to be an idiot. You know, I mean, there are certain laws you can't, like in America, we have, you know, First Amendment is the biggest right in America. That's the, you know, that's where we put our constitution, you know, freedom of speech, religion, and press. Well, you can't yell fire in the movie theater. That's a compromise on the First Amendment. And as much as I'm a First Amendment activist, and anybody who knows me in the media knows that, I agree with that, because people would just stomp on people and kill people to get out of the movie theater or the whatever the public forum if you yell fire. They would go crazy. They would say, me first, get the hell out of my way. So there are certain compromises you have to have. But my point is that the universe is not here for our titillation. It has rules. It has laws, as we call it, universal laws. And if you follow them, you benefit. If you don't, you're going to be punished. It's as simple as that. And to me, I believe in universal laws. I don't respect, now, this is my personal opinion, I'm entitled to my opinion, I have a much greater respect for universal laws than I do for legislative or religious laws. Because
okay.
They're basically plagiarized.
We're coming to the back end of our conversation, Bruce, which means we have to repeat this, because I want to talk about time travel and progression and regression and all the other stuff we never got time to get round to. The last time you were on here, my very first guest, I got emails, okay? And I got a lot of emails from people who loved you and wanted to hear more of you. And I got some emails from people who said, this guy's wacko. Let's address those people right now. What would you say to them? If I get more emails saying, what have you had him on for? He's wacko. What have you got to say to them?
What I have to say to them is that if my philosophy in life, which is psychic empowerment, taking charge of your life, I don't take credit for things. I'm reporting things that are scientifically documented because I'm a scientist first, and I've never given up my scientific training. Now, if somebody has a narrow-minded paradigm or they're depressed, you know what I find out? We live in a world of have and have nots. There's always the war. Okay, which means that if somebody's depressed, their life is for caca. Okay, and somebody is successful and happy and empowered like me and patients I work with, then they're going to hate me because they're jealous. This is why you look at the media. You have colleagues. If you get a successful radio or TV show, you know what happens to your colleagues? They hate you.
Do you know something? That's absolutely true. Not with everybody, but with some people. They do hate you.
I'm just reporting the facts. So my point is that, you know, I don't care. In fact, that if they don't want to look, I don't care. Let me tell you something. When I give a lecture or a workshop, and I do many of those, I don't care about people who are skeptics. They're not my audience. Just like you have demographics in the media, or if you're a liberal or a conservative candidate politically, you don't campaign in the other districts because you're not going to get their vote.
Sure. Okay.
I deal with people that are open-minded or protagonists. Those are my people. The other ones I could care less about.
And
so the people that will not be
ones who have
online,
they're the ones who have the problem you're saying.
You ever read the comments online, whether it's a book or a movie? There's always some jerk saying, oh, this thing sucks, okay? There's always somebody yelling and screaming because they probably haven't had sex in 5 months or because they got bored. They're just expressing their own neuroses and their own hatred because they're petty and whatever. So I don't care about people who are, quote, my enemies. I have a lot of people who hate me. But you know something? I'm not running for office, so I don't need a plurality. All I care about is the people that I work with. I have thousands of cases that are very successful. The reason why I have a lot of fans and readers and followers is because what I'm talking about, my theory works. It's backed by science. And when I just gave you this, the statement I just made that you agree with about the petty jealousy of colleagues, for example, well, I didn't make this up. These are principles that work. You may not like it, but they do work. And my point is, if they work, they work. And I have an ethical obligation to represent, to speak the truth. And I do turn a lot of people off. I piss a lot of people off. But you know something? Those are people that are always going to be turned off because they only want to hear what they think. If they're wallowing in their self-pity, or if they're just an atheist, An atheist hates me. A Bible thumper hates me. An agnostic doesn't like me either because I believe in God. Gee, nail me to the cross, okay? It's my First Amendment rights.
We have to park it there. We're right out of time. This is going to become the longest edition of The Unexplained Online that I have ever done. And I've really enjoyed this. And I want the things that you've been telling me to be true because life would be an awful lot better if they were. So I think we have to come back to this conversation another time. And I think I probably said that to you 10 years. Let's not leave it 10 years next time.
I would love to reincarnate. I would like your listeners to go to my website, drbrucegoldberg.com. The Exploring the Fifth Dimension book deals with most of the topics we discuss today. And I would love to reincarnate with you. Howard, you're a fun, you're a great host. You're very personable and bright, and you do your homework. And to me, anytime you want to do something, mi casa, su casa.
An insight into the world of Dr. Bruce Goldberg in California, USA. What a fascinating man. And he was the first guest on the very first edition of The Unexplained nearly 10 years ago. And I hope that we're still here doing this in another 10 years, but doing it a whole lot bigger and a whole lot better. We can do that with your help. Please keep spreading the word. Go to the website right now, www.theunexplained.tv. If you can make a donation, please make a donation. And at the very least, please send me some feedback about the show. Tell me about how you think I'm doing it. Give me some suggestions for future guests. Any feedback at all, always welcome. The person without whom I could do none of this is Adam Cornwell. He is my fantastic webmaster at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool. Adam works really hard on getting the show out to you and also designing, maintaining, and creating that website that you see there at www.theunexplained.tv. Thanks, Adam. Martin, I think I said Happy New Year to you last time. If I didn't, I hope this is a good one for you. Martin's the guy who made the theme tune. Most important person in all of this is you. Please spread the word about this show any way you can, and please keep the faith with The Unexplained. More great shows in the pipeline coming soon. My name is Howard Hughes. I'm in rain-soaked London, and I will return to you very soon with another edition. Please take care.